This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Good morning and welcome. We are back here on a Monday. Hope you had a great weekend and you're ready to take on the week. Should be a lot of fun. I am a little concerned. I know you used to be kind of a meteorologist.
No, I was never a meteorologist.
That's why I said kind of.
No, not even close.
What was your title?
Well, I did some weather. I mean, in addition to reporting, producing, photographer.
But what did it say on your card?
Well, it didn't say weather person or meteorologist, for goodness sake.
Did you have the magnets?
Yes, I did.
Okay, you throw that little sunshine on there.
4 minutes of me with magnets was great.
I'd pay for the tape. I think it'd be worth seeing. I am a little concerned, and I know weather people are. Lindsay's been following this, and we've had a couple of conversations that, you know, a few years ago, what was it, maybe 3 years ago, during the Christmas parade.
Fastest Christmas parade ever. We literally ran the Christmas parade.
And Taylorville then got hit, and I know we did a fundraiser for them afterwards, and that was all fine. But this
go
weather...
back about 10 years, and it was Washington was hit in December, too.
And
Washington, the little town.
Yeah, this has the whole sort of feel over the next 10 days of, like, when you go from 28 to 63... back
and
down
high
to
winds
32
and everything else. It's bizarre.
Keep an eye on it.
I will do that.
Well, I meant people that do that.
But I do that as well, because if there's an emergency, I got to go to work.
Yeah.
You know, that was the Christmas parade. We, three years ago.
I think there wasn't a parade last year. So it was either two or three. I think it was 3 years ago.
I mean, I went home, we got everything ready in the basement, the dog's cure, et cetera. And I'm waiting to be called in for Dan, because it was scary looking at the sky. It was everything you'd ever, you know, heard about would happen during a tornado.
And what is the process? I mean, you don't have to give me all the secret details, but I mean, you know, there is a command sort of structure in place.
Yeah, we there is an emergency response group, and we meet at least annually, and we do training. And I'm really not in charge of much.
No, but you got to get out and be the face of things.
Exactly. If there's a crisis, but you know, the real people are the first responders, and then you know, but I'm more of a spokesperson than anything else.
Yeah, but you got to get the message out there and just be aware. The next few days, it looks like we could have some dicey stuff. Hopefully, it'll be just fine. All right, so let's talk boat docks before we get into local numbers. And I read a really interesting piece in the National Review about mandates and vax and the body politic, which was sort of fascinating, but had some interesting numbers in there that I want to share with you. But let's start about, you know, lakefront development and what all has happened down there. If you look at the beach house and the docks that are all out there, I mean, it looks 1,000 times better than it used to. And I know this has been a topic on the table for a very long time, but it's back again. And the villagers are gathering the pitchforks and the torches.
Well, we hope not. You know, Brian, you go back probably 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, the park district and the city got together and said, we need to really bring more to Lake Decatur. And so we partnered, we brought in a consultant who did a master plan for, the park district is really more in the forefront of most of this. The city's responsible for the water and, you know, park district is recreation.
Let's define that for everyone though. The park district owns, if you go down to Nelson Park, throughout all the way through Chandler Park, the land side of everything is owned by the park district.
Right, and the water side is the city's responsibility.
Right. So it's two different entities. Yes.
And watershed and quality and capacity.
Lake Patrol,
and all that.
Yes.
Lake Patrol, all that sort of stuff. But we really, as two governmental bodies, wanted to take Lake Decatur to a higher level. And new boat docks were built. The promenade was crafted to where people are down there enjoying the lakefront. We had hoped that we would see some additional restaurants and shops down there. And the big goal is to have a marina operator that is there selling gas and, you know, ice and whatever, you know, if you need rope for your boat. But additionally, even to the level of renting kayaks and float boats for the afternoon, because not everybody can afford a boat. Mm-hmm. And so we got kind of phase one really done, and it was a success. And we, at that time, we had a lot of people who were angry, who said, oh, those boat docks are too expensive. Nobody will ever want them. Pre-pandemic, I think there was a wait list of about 40 people who wanted docks that we just couldn't accommodate down there. And a lot of people bought boats during COVID because they wanted something recreationally to do with their family.
That would be safe.
Safe and outside and healthy and all that sort of thing. So I don't know an accurate number of what the demand is.
But there's a waiting list.
There is a waiting list. And we sent out an RFP, the City and Park District. Again, it is a partnership between these two governmental bodies trying to, you know, make this work for the community. We really didn't get a regular marina operator that wanted to come in and take responsibility for all of this. And, you know, in fairness, they have to see that they're going to make money on this. But we were able to get some interest from GH Marine. And so the proposal is to build boat slips, you know, the first round of that. It's not tax dollar investment. It is private investment. And then he can recoup the dock fees there. And we're trying to do this in the least intrusive way. We're trying to keep as many of the clubs intact as we work our way down. And hopefully, you know, these boat clubs that exist are going to say, wow, I'd really like my boat to be down there. You know, they would be given the people who are displaced will be first on the opportunity to get a new dock.
Okay, these docks are not owned by, I mean, they're rented, correct?
Yes. Okay. Well, but people invest and they build up, you know, they add to it, they get a building permit. We tried to really slow this down in the past 10 years to say, hey, just a heads up, this is a yearly lease. And, you know, what you put in, obviously, if you put in a lift, you can take your lift out and do something else with it. But, yeah, it's kind of at your own risk, if you will.
And have they paid the appropriate number of dollars? When I mean, you know, comparing it to other lakes, comparing it to other, what I've found here with the city of Decatur in particular over the years is in some ways you guys will just charge out the wazoo. And in other ways, it's like people get it for so cheap for so long that any sort of incremental difference, everybody loses their minds.
And that happened when we raised the dock fees probably 8 or 9 years ago. And if you don't live in the city of Decatur, which we have some lakefront property that is not in the city, you get hit with a double whammy if you've got, you know, a dock at your house or something that you're not technically in the city. So you get double the fee.
Okay, and that would be like just a non-residential number versus residential because right. They're not paying taxes.
Right.
They would maybe argue, well, we buy stuff at the store and we eat in your restaurants and all that. You're not gonna make everyone happy, but what's the plan then, or what's happening tonight and moving forward in the timeline?
Well, right now we're looking at a memorandum of understanding so that the dock builder feels comfortable with moving ahead with buying the materials and getting work. These docks are expected to be available next year.
So that's soon.
If everything goes well. And so that's the plan. And so
how many are we talking about?
I want to say it's 40 to begin with.
Okay.
And then as demand grows or doesn't grow, he will build additional docks. Now, if we in 5 years or so get somebody who wants to come in and run a marina, then we have the opportunity to buy those docks and allow the marina operator to be in charge of them.
All right. So right now, then the dock would go in. The people who are displaced from the old docks would have the first chance at mm-hmm. the new docks. The money they pay goes to the
80%
operator.
Would go toward the investor who is building the docks.
Because he's building that without using tax dollars.
Correct. And the park district would get 20% because the park district is really stepping up on this. They are going to put in infrastructure because we've got to have more electrical. We do have electrical running down to this area, but it's not going to be enough. We need bigger lines, and I know nothing about electricity.
Okay, so the partnership all the way around. I mean, you want to build a better marina, a better yes. lake experience. You've got a private partner willing to come in and put their own money at risk. You've got the park district working with the city of Decatur, and that's not always been the case. Sometimes that water's edge, land's edge has been like civil war. And so what has kept our lake from being a bigger recreational opportunity?
Well, I'll tell you, Brian, it's interesting. I think when the Devon opened, okay, I think people who live on the lake or have a fishing boat or a pontoon that have always used the lake mm-hmm. have always used the lake. Maybe they camp in one of the campground areas. But for the rest of us, you know, it's like you didn't have an opportunity because there wasn't much to do. Well, about the same time that the Devon opened, there was a little business that rented paddle boards and people were able. It's like people said, oh, we have a lake. Man, it'd be cool to have a boat. Look at those boats out there. They look like they're having fun. And so I think there's kind of a mind shift of I could do this. Well, right now we don't have the opportunity unless you go buy a boat. And you are going to have to launch it every time you want to go in. And launching a boat, I won't do it. I you know, I
But people do it in Shelbyville all the time.
They do. And they're better at it than me.
Okay, but no, what I'm wondering though is we went down there and there's some great hiking trails that go along the lake front. You get all the view and you see all the boats and the houseboats and people having a good time. And I've heard from boaters over the years, I don't know whether it's fair or not, that the process is harder to come here and do than it is to go there and do.
And I don't know because I'm not ever the one driving the truck.
Yeah.
But we used to go to Shelbyville and rent a pontoon boat a couple of times, you know, a summer. And sometimes you couldn't even get a boat there. And they've got a pretty big marina at Lithia Springs.
Yeah. So that would be the goal, not necessarily to replicate that, but to get more people to use.
Absolutely.
I mean, the one thing we have in Decatur, unlike any other community, I mean, there's a lake in Springfield, but it's all the way on the other side of, like, outside of town. I mean, we're, like, one of the very few communities with a lake right smack dab in the middle of our community.
And how many years have you spent driving across the lake going, well, that looks nice? And but not a real opportunity to participate in it. And the Devon really opened that up. And now we have the adventure, the Splash Cove place and all the stuff going on.
Well, if you look at the east side of town, in about a 10-year period, completely changed over
radically
to become a destination place, meaning people here can certainly enjoy it. But you can't even do it all in a weekend. I mean, when you think about the zoo and the Children's Museum and the Sculpture Park and Splash Cove and the Outlook Adventure Park and the batting cages and the ropes courses, and then you go to the amphitheater and
you're exhausted.
No, it's a lot,
it
right?
It's a lot. And I mean, it's great because we want this to be a great place for families to enjoy, the families that live here. And we want you to, you know, show off our community to your friends and relatives that come in, and we'd like to attract more people here.
Well, I can tell you this, and I don't think I'm being a homer here. I really don't. I'm fairly objective about it. But I know when we were doing Just a Roam Away and doing kind of the giveaways over the summer about being able to come experience things, when you looked at Lafayette and Bloomington and Springfield and Decatur and Danville and compared, everybody from around our group kept saying, we had so much better. I mean, it wasn't sort of, it was just, I think sometimes we just don't count our successes enough. And then when you go back and look at the aggregate, you go, wow, there has been a lot that has happened over the last 10 years.
A lot that's happened. I mean, starting downtown. And that was Paul Osborne's dream that Tuna carried out, and we were able to continue that going. I mean, we have a great downtown. I mean, we've taken some hits because of the pandemic, but every place has. But, you know, it's funny because I will hear from people in Bloomington and Springfield say, wow, your downtown is so nice. We were there over the weekend for a hockey tournament, or we were there for my daughter's softball games. And they talk about our restaurants and how cute the little shops are. And, you know, I love being in downtown.
Absolutely. I know they had the Christmas walk on Wednesday, the Christmas parade on Saturday, Santa's house. I mean, the transfer house looks unbelievable.
Oh, Terry Hamill and that group she, you know, garnered with the Community Foundation and Natalie Beck, and all the labor and the small businesses that helped make that possible. It is just magical.
Yeah, there's a lady that's all upset about it that wrote me a very long letter.
I got the same letter.
I'm sure you did. It was, to me, look, even without COVID, you know, this would have been the right move. Because the transfer houses looked great on the outside for a long time after that.
It was a shell.
Yeah.
There was nothing inside. It's like, why do we have this historic treasure that we're doing nothing with?
That's exactly right. And now it looks fantastic. And it's going to have multi-use. I mean, now Santa's here throughout the holidays, but you could have private lunches. You could people in the community will be able to now use
this. And if you want to have an event, you can stage it for your headquarters down there where you can, you know, put things, or you can run the operation out of, or as you said, you can have your own. It'd be fun to have like a bridal shop. It'd be lovely.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's exactly right. It looks great. And to all of the labor groups that help with that and
we have
the Community Foundation.
Here that
I mean, it was
step up.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's talk COVID numbers. I don't know if you read this. The story is called Vaccine Mandates and the Body Politic, and it's in the National Review. Not exactly a left-wing bastion of propaganda. But there was one recent study that they quote in this article found that retirement-age Americans, meaning ages 65 and up, who died of COVID, lost collectively in this country 4 million years of life. Now, I think you just need to, like, or maybe this is a globe. Nope, Americans. Americans aged 25 to 64 years old lost a cumulative 5 million years. And so if you look at the percentages, in 2020, people age 85 and older were 15% more likely to die than in prior years. 20 to 40-somethings were 27% more likely to die. When you start looking, instead of just the number of deaths and put the qualitative, well, this is how many years of life they lost, instead of, oh, well, it's just grandma, which some people have been from the beginning, those are staggering numbers.
They are staggering. I have tickets to an upcoming show in Chicago to see the production of Frozen. And I got some information on it. I was reading this morning, you must be fully vaccinated or you have to have proof with a PCR test within a certain number of hours to get in. If you are coughing or sneezing, you will be taken out of the theater.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to stay open. And, you know, you were talking a little bit earlier this morning about the small businesses that, are impacted by all of this. And you just have to, that may not have been today. That might have been last week. I don't know. I'm in a fog. But, you know, small businesses were annihilated by COVID. Entertainment, leisure, those businesses were very much, I mean, devastated. And so they are going to take this very, very seriously. And Brian, we're not going to change anybody's mind right now at this point. People are losing their jobs over having to be vaccinated. They're walking away.
No, those numbers are, small percentages.
I mean, that's a pretty big decision for somebody to make is I'm not going to be a nurse anymore because I will not be forced to be vaccinated. So that's their lifelong goal. They went to school for this. They may have student loan debt, whatever. But it's not being able to do something you want to do without having to go through a lot of hassle is probably the only thing that's going to change people and get them to be vaccinated now.
Yeah. But the article also goes on to point out the negligence of somebody who chooses not to. A father, for example, who maybe even if they don't die, they're laid up for weeks or maybe even months. And they're not able, wife, children, parents, they're saddled with medical bills. They're, and then if you look at this, 121,000 children in America lost a primary caregiver. That's a greater toll of American parents than Vietnam.
Unimaginable.
So when you put those things in perspective, because I think from the very beginning, it's been you live or you die. You get it or you don't get it. You get it and you're fine. And we've not looked at the variances or the gray at all collectively. I mean, you go to a hospital every day. You see the long haulers and the people who deal with this and have dealt with this. And we've had everybody from NFL athletes to, people of all ages.
Oh, the lasting, and we don't even know yet what a lot of the lasting implications are. But, I visited a patient in the hospital a couple of months ago, and he had been one of the original people who was hospitalized in the ICU with COVID, and he's had all kinds of ongoing health problems ever since. And he was back in the hospital for a semi-related incident, but his life is forever changed. And we didn't have the vaccine available at the time, but I who is it? The congresswoman who from the South was comparing COVID to cancer.
Yeah.
And that, and we haven't had to close a single school because of cancer. Well, cancer is really not contagious.
No, you're not in.
It's not a respiratory. It's like how.
Well, because it's become politicized and now it's used to draw lines, right down the middle. You're this or you're that. And we do that with everything now. I mean, it's not just COVID. I mean, religion's becoming that. I mean, in fact, the argument can be made that politics have become our religion as a country, and which is not a great thing. So I it's a very interesting piece. It looks at all sides of this, but we've lost this sort of collective sort of thing. For this real, wild streak of independence. My DNA is built to have, to be contrary, to not just fall into the group, but it isn't about you. It's about everybody else in your family.
And that's what we've lost. And it's not even just your family members,
community.
It's anybody you're around. I mean,
and it's the small business owner you claim to be speaking up for. Until we get this thing under control, these people are going to continue to be impacted.
Absolutely. And, but I wish there were a magic way to change the mindset of people, but it's like, what does it take? Does it take losing someone in your family?
Yeah. How many of those crushing videos do you have to watch on somebody's deathbed where they're telling people to get vaccinated because they didn't and it's too late? I mean, how many of those do you need to see?
I know. And it's, but people are, and we've talked about this for the last couple of months, so dug in. It is. And it's frustrating to people who really are trying to change the mindset and to protect everybody. It's very frustrating, but, you know, it's just an argument you can't win.
75 cases reported on Friday. That was from Thursday to Friday. 24 hospitalizations. That's about as high as it ever. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't much higher during the peak of like September and October of last year, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was.
How much higher?
Oh, Brian, I'm going to tell you the wrong numbers, but I mean, it was really bad last winter, especially when we hit. It started getting bad in October and it continued to be bad. January was terrible. And we had really, really high numbers. And, you know, the availability of ICU beds, and keep in mind, ICU beds weren't built for COVID. You know, that's where people who are very, very sick end up. But ICU beds were meant for you when you have a heart attack or a stroke or you're very, very ill. So we still have those things going on. COVID didn't stop people from getting hurt in a car accident or having a serious medical ailment. And looking at the numbers last week, the ICU bed availability, going back to that old regions thing, you know, they had regions and phases and XYZ, but the Springfield region and the Decatur-Champaign region, Springfield, their beds were a lot more full than ours, but ours were filling up. And it's a scary thing when you don't have beds available for people who need them.
I talked to one hospital official last week who said that the vast majority of this spread is coming from kids who are asymptomatic and getting grandma sick or the aunt sick, and his families are getting together. But this is how it's spreading.
Well, the numbers went up last week, obviously, you know, right after Thanksgiving, when we had record numbers of people traveling, number one, going everywhere, where maybe we didn't have it bad here, but people brought it back. Now they're spreading it through schools to teachers and custodians and, you know, somebody else who takes it home to, as you said, mom, dad, grandma, whoever. And we're not done. I mean, Christmas is a few weeks away, so you can see that happening more. And people are really not wearing masks, even though they're mandated for indoors. People aren't doing it. They're just not. They're done. They're done with COVID. They want to move on.
I guess being done, and that's okay. I just don't know what kind of damage.
No,
I mean, about them being done. I don't disagree with you. That's just sort of the mentality. We're over it. We're done with it. We're going to move on and treat it like.
I'm vaccinated. I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know. But,
well, or that's even better. I mean, if everybody would be able to say that, we would be okay.
Well, New York is doing pretty good, as I understand it, because their vaccine numbers are up.
Well, their vaccine numbers are up, but if you look at the state, it's like Illinois. Oh, like, we've got a really high number for the state, but if you get outside of Chicago and down south, that number falls to half of what it is.
Yeah, down south is in
even worse.
Yeah, dangerous shape.
All right, Mayor, we appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.